Welcome, Rundown Nation. Wall back with you. I'm sure some people are disappointed because we had a fantastic show last week. We had some people stepping in for me. We had Mr. Josh Harlow as a guest who's been on a number of times this season. Fantastic having him every time. Jeremy Harlow, his brother, the Big 12 beat writer, de facto beat writer, anyways, joined also. And then Mr. Story, who's with me today, you hosted the program. How did it go, Mr. Story?
I tried to fill in as admirably as I could. Nobody can really sit in the big chair, Mr. Wall, but I think we did an okay job. In fact, my brother texted me. He said, good job, guys. It's best, you know, it's as good as we see on the radio sometimes, or see we hear on the radio. He's like, so makes you wonder, like, why are those guys getting paid millions of dollars and you guys are just doing this for fun? I'm like, that's a good question.
Absolutely. We need to find another job. Instead of just making $0, we could be working over there at Barstool. You know, making some money and actually giving good information, in my opinion. I know some of the fans disagree when they email me about my hot takes. So I will say that. But I listened to the episode. I loved it. I loved how we got that Big 12, some Texas intel from that local Mr. Jeremy Harlow and Josh Harlow, always bringing fantastic things to the program. I liked how you kept the energy up, kept it moving. This week, I'm going to have to try to keep up with you, though, Mr. Story. I have it kind of easy, though, because we have week 15 of college football. Everyone that's a college football fan knows it is championship weekend.
Oh, it is championship weekend, and I could not be more excited. You know, Jeremy, I'm glad he brought it up on the program last week. We were talking about Utah. They were on the outside looking in, and I didn't even think could put this together, but you got those automatic bids for 11 and 12, which means that those teams that are sitting in that 11-12 right now, Miami's at 12, they're going to have to do some work in this conference. Is Miami playing in their conference championship? Forgive me. I should know this right off the bat, but I cannot remember off the top of my head.
No, they're not playing, my friend. You know what? We had that sneaky Duke-Virginia matchup in the ACC because of all the chaos that is the ACC. We got a five-loss team playing in the championship. Miami's out looking in. They're sitting home watching this game on the television this week.
Yeah, well, we are going to get into some of those games. I mean, there's some teams that absolutely stamped their ticket to it, including Alabama there. And Ole Miss, I'm surprised that they are right smack dab in the middle there with, you didn't put it in the show sheet, but I feel like we have to touch on Lane Kiffin is out at Ole Miss. He has moved on to LSU, literally and figuratively. He's gone. He's on the plane and he is in Louisiana now.
Yeah, and that's going to be an awkward situation there for that Ole Miss football team. He made an ultimatum. The news goes anyways. He made an ultimatum that his staff needs to leave with him and not coach for any playoff game that they have. So we'll see what comes of it. You know, you never want to see that in a sport. It's the way it goes, though. It's money. Money makes the world move round, I guess, Mr. Story. I mean, week 14, you mentioned it. Two undefeated teams. This is what we know about college football. There are two undefeated teams in the nation right now. Ohio State and Indiana. They're sitting 1-2. I mean, it's hard to argue. Are you going to make an argument against that? Have you heard arguments that they should not be 1-2?
The only argument I heard was after the only, quote unquote, air quotes here, win by 24 against Wisconsin the week before the bye. So 2 weeks ago or two games ago for them. Now, they absolutely throttled Purdue. That was the only kind of rumblings I heard was, well, they've got the lesser end of the Big Ten schedule. But come on. 9-0 in conference, 12-0 overall. Their point differential is probably best in the nation. It's definitely up there. 532 points scored this year, 131 against. I don't know how you could say for certainty that Indiana doesn't belong in the top two, if not number one.
Absolutely. I think that's the question is should Indiana be number one right now? Now I'm not betting. I'm putting, you know, I'm giving Indiana points in this game against Ohio State. Don't get me wrong, but Indiana has played Oregon. Indiana has played Illinois. Indiana played Iowa. I mean, they played some good football teams and they won those football games, came out with the W's every time. So I think that's really the only question. Should Indiana be number one? But I'm not going to argue for it because there's no way I'm giving Ohio State points in any football game this season. At 3-4, we got Georgia number 3, Texas Tech number 4, a fantastic football team all year round, doing what they need to do. I love watching their football games. I'm sure you do too, because they score some points, baby.
Oh, my goodness. I love a good Texas Tech. This Texas Tech BYU matchup is going to be something else. Right behind them is Oregon. Oregon, how do they look like they're much improved. It kind of hit a lull there in the middle of the season. They almost lost to Iowa, but they look much improved in recent weeks. I'm excited to see what this Ducks team can do in the playoffs.
Absolutely. I mean, that USC game, it got right at the beginning, I was a little concerned for them, and then there was there was no need to worry anymore. I mean, our Iowa Hawkeyes played them much better than USC did, in my opinion, but that's tough. It's tough to play a Ducks football team the way they're playing football right now, the way they're coached up. Every game they come into, I mean, I don't want to bet against the Ducks We'll see where they land exactly in the playoffs. I mean, Oklahoma is a team I'm looking at. Texas A&M, obviously, with that loss last week, they actually think they. Yeah, no, they're still ahead of Oklahoma a little bit, but
Yeah.
that's the matchup I really want to see. I don't know if we're going to get it, but Oklahoma, Texas A&M's a matchup I want to see.
Yeah, me too. I want to see what Texas, how Texas A&M, that's their first loss in the season, losing to Texas. There's another team, Texas, that got much more improved as the season went on. But see how Texas A&M responds to that, how they bounce back. Can they bounce back if they bounce back? And if they had to play te Oklahoma, man, Oklahoma's a stifling defense.
Absolutely are. I mean, you knew that was going to happen when Venables got over there. He finally accomplished his goal. I don't want to get too deep in it. We got 9 Alabama, which you mentioned, number 10 Notre Dame, number 11 BYU. Maybe we'll have a little more time to talk about those top 10 playoff rankings in a little bit later on. Group of five, I would like to mention, we can't leave out the group of five here. We got Tulane at number 20, North Texas, which is a game we're going to talk about today on this program, at 24, James Madison at 25, all of them entering championship week ranked. You going to take one of them to win the Natty, my friend?
I would probably not. I mean, you're going to get some good odds. I will say that. If you want to throw a dart, these are the teams to do it on. But your dart throws might be better off at Vanderbilt, Texas, Miami. What are the chances that one of those guys moves up if BYU loses this Saturday?
Yeah, I don't know. I might take my chances on North Texas. I just don't know what it is about that football team, but I can't wait to talk about that game. I mean, let's start with some games from last week. We'll review some of those games that you guys were discussing on the podcast last week. You guys nailed most of this stuff, let me tell you. Ohio State ends up beating Michigan 27-9, although at the beginning there, it was looking like Michigan might be able to put up a fight against the Buckeyes, for the first team really this year that looked that way.
Well, I think Michigan kind of listened into the podcast because Sharon Moore did exactly what I thought that they should do, is try to keep the ball on the ground as much as possible. Cudzall had 11 carries, Marshall had 7, but they were forced into a negative game script, having to put it in the air. Although Underwood only attempted 18 passes, Julian Sand has just been absolutely lights out over the last 6 weeks, especially last month. And then Bo Jackson on the ground, he didn't score a touchdown, but 22 for 117. That kid is an absolute stud. He is, I believe he's a true freshman, if not a redshirt. Maybe he's a redshirt freshman. Either way, he's going to be a key part of that program next year.
Absolutely. And anybody that had OSU, they did cover this one. And I was telling people, I got a lot of people, every week I get people telling me about their bets or asking me questions about their bets. A lot of people were on that Michigan money line to win straight up. And I said, yeah, that's a good bet. Now you have to understand, just because the Wolverines did not win this football game does not make it a bad bet. They're not going to win this game 50% of the time. When you're getting that plus money like they had, plus 200s, plus 300s, they don't win that game 50% of the time. It's just the distribution of odds, which we talk about from time to time here. I don't want to get too deep in it today, though. This total did stay under, so Mr. Story probably lost some money on this game, betting every own over last week.
Well, let's not say every over, but this one in particular, I was hoping for a few more fireworks. I will say this, though, that wide receiver room for Ohio State, which had been banged up recently with Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith, who actually had made some noise in the Heisman race midseason, that finally looked healthier. Wasn't a ton of production from Smith, 3 for 40. He did catch a touchdown, 5 for 82 for Carnell Tate and a touchdown. I think that's going to affect some lines as we get into this conference championship game and especially the college football playoffs.
Absolutely. See who they play in the playoffs. Do they have a good secondary? Do they have the cornerbacks that can match up? I agree with you, Mr. Story. I do need you to make a pact with me. We're going to go through this one real fast because I would like a house to live in. I would not want to be kicked out of the house by my wife. But Indiana ended up beating Purdue last week 56-3. Not a great game for the Boilermakers.
Well, I was with Josh and Jeremy on Friday night. We had the Texas A&M game on. That was the main screen, and they're both Indiana fans. Josh is a huge Indiana fan, so we turned that on for a little while. At some point, we're like, we'll just put that on in the other room because 56-3. I mean, what a season for Indiana! 12-0, complete domination in this game. I think they had over 250 rushing yards in this. Hemby had a touchdown on the ground. Multiple guys had touchdowns on the ground. Black had two touchdowns. This was wire to wire. This was exactly the kind of performance that they needed to stamp their ticket as the team to beat coming into the football, the playoffs.
I'll tell you this. We were watching this game, and right before it started, she turned it on. My wife turned it on, and she's said something. I don't recall exactly what. And I was like, well, this is probably not going to be much of a football game. Trying to be as nice as I could about it. And then it ended up coming to about the second half, and the score was 29-3. And the channel got changed very quickly. But again, we're going to move on. We're going to go through that one real quick because I'd like a house to sleep in. Georgia, Georgia Tech. Georgia ends up winning this football game 16-9, a little closer than a lot of people thought. But if you watched this game last year, you might have expected this outcome. This is a rivalry. This is a real rivalry in college football.
This is certainly a rivalry game. Georgia Tech loves playing tough with Georgia. They drag this game into the mud. I mean, you had a strong running game for Georgia there with Haynes, or excuse me, with Nate Frazier. On the other side, Haynes King, he was pretty ineffective for Georgia Tech. You got to give credit to the defense here. One touchdown in the entire game for Georgia. I don't know what to say about it. Like, Georgia didn't cover in this one. It was a 16.5-point spread. You mentioned this is a rivalry. These two teams, they fight each other tough. This one went way under the total. So if you were hoping for a few more fireworks, explosion plays, we had talked about Haynes King in the past, probably one of the best, if not the best, dual threat quarterbacks in college football. Unfortunately, you just didn't get much out of him on Saturday.
No, you didn't. And Glenn Schumann, the defensive coordinator over there at Georgia, he coached a phenomenal game. They had spies when they needed to. They went in their cover two when they needed to. Not much cover three because they didn't have to worry about Haynes going deep over the top. But Mr. Schumann had a fantastic football game, in my opinion. I agree with you, Frazier, really, for the Georgia Bulldogs, pulled off a fantastic football game. If he can do that in their playoff games, in this SEC championship game that we're going to talk about, it's going to be tough to stop those Bulldogs. Another football game that was really exciting, especially for me last week. Texas takes down the uglier Texas A&M, 27-17 in this football game.
Yeah, well, I refuse to give credit to Steve Sarkisian in this game. I'm going to give credit to Arch Manning, as tough as it is for those words to get past my lips. Although I should probably give credit to Trey Wisner, should I not? I mean, he was absolutely the engine of the Texas offense. 19 for 155 on the ground, and he added two catches for 19 yards. I mean, Texas was losing this game. They were down by a touchdown going into halftime. It was 10-3. Concepcion had that end around touchdown, put him up 10-3 right at the end of the half there. But Texas, they completely dominated the second half there. Chunk gains. Manning, he was getting it done on the ground. He had a touchdown through the air and on with his legs, and they just kept Texas A&M off balance for the entire second half. So in this one, I believe the spread was Texas plus two, if correct me, 2.5, somewhere in that. They definitely covered that one, winning by 10 points.
Yeah, it depended on when you got it throughout the week. It was because, yeah, I was watching this line and I was big on the Longhorns. I was taking them on the money line mostly. But yeah, it was from 4.5 all the way down to 2.5, maybe even two if you caught it right before the game. The Sharps did have that one going in with that closing line value. I would like to say to Mr. Josh Harlow, hey, Mr. Manning stepped up for a big game, baby. Loved watching it. I agreed 100%. He has not stepped up for those big games, but this was about as big as he can get. With that Aggie team coming in undefeated with that goose egg. Hey, no more goose egg for you, Aggies. I love it being a Texas fan. We'll jump to another game over there in the SEC. Alabama takes down Auburn in another big rivalry game, 27-20.
I mean, 5-7 Auburn takes 10-2 Alabama to the wire. We had talked about it on the podcast last week. We have talked about how the Iron Bowl always provides some excitement, some edge of your seat moments, and this was not one that was you couldn't change the channel, even though you had the USC game going on. You couldn't change the channel because you never knew what was going to happen in this game. I mean, Alabama, so Auburn ties it up with 11 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Cobb ran for a 2-yard touchdown, and then Simpson hits Horton in the end zone for with just 3:45 to go. And then Auburn's driving. He had a third down stop by Alabama that got negated by a penalty. I mean, this was just this is Iron Bowl classic, and I'm just really excited to talk about this game. I cannot believe we get another one. But it was only 5-7, 5-7 Auburn.
It's ridiculous. I mean, go back to the kick six where they kicked the field goal and too short, returned by Auburn for a touchdown off of the kick. I mean, it's just these games, they always come down to something. And you know what really made me, well, you might not know this, but Auburn fumbling that football at the end really made me angry because I had Alabama, I had my system up and it had Alabama -7.5 and, Auburn +6. So Alabama winning by seven was the worst possible outcome. Ended up losing a lot of the day's money just on this one game. And this was the later game, too. So it was unfortunate for me. I was not a happy camp or with this Iron Bowl, but that's how it goes. That's how the cookie crumbles, as they say. Some of those group of five games, I'm not sure if you caught any. I'll tell the scores real quick. If you want to jump into any of them, we can. James Madison beat Coastal Carolina 59 to 10. North Texas 52 to 25 over Temple. UNLV playing their very close to proximity. Nevada winning 42 to 17. Any of those games catch your eye? Anything you want to talk about with those ones?
Well, I think extremely noteworthy that North Texas, that 52-25 win over Temple, North Texas racked up 600 plus total yards, and they were able to score at will. I think that's going to come into play when we get into the conference championships, talking about those later.
Yeah, and I mean, Temple, not a fantastic football team by any means, but we're talking about 5-7. You know, we're not talking about a terrible team in North Texas. They score points. That's what North Texas does, baby. They score points. I want to jump into the games for this week, and I know you're excited to talk about some of these. Normally, I say the big ones for last, Mr. Story, but I want to talk about the big one first, and that is the Big Ten Championship. We got number two, Indiana, taking on number one team in the nation, Ohio State, at Lucas Oil Stadium, Saturday, 7 p.m. on Fox. Does that get you going or what, baby?
This is the biggest game of the weekend by far, and arguably the biggest Big Ten title matchup since the realignment of that conference. 12-0 versus 12-0. You got playoff seeding on the line. You got byes on the line. Definitely the number one ranking in the nation on the line. So the big question is, Indiana, can they keep up this feverish pace the way they've been scoring? They got one of the deepest, probably most physical running back rotations in the entire country that's carried them through multiple games. I mean, Fernandez has been spectacular this year, but they have leaned on the ground game quite a bit. It's kept that offense moving. And on the other side, Ohio State, we talked about it. They are one of the most complete teams in the entire nation. The defense is dominant. I mean, they locked down Michigan last week. They're peaking at the right time. They're getting their wide receivers healthy again. We talked about Tate. We talked about Smith. No major injury concerns. They're full strength. And Indiana, they're coming into this full strength as well. So we're getting two teams that are full strength running into each other. This one feels like OSU and over to me. I mean, -4.5 to -5.5, depending on where, when you're getting it. I'm not a huge fan of that, but that 47.5 number, that is lower than I would have thought. I kind of like this one a lot. I mean, explosive plays, downfield plays, force Indiana to start throwing the ball, let Fernando Mendoza make plays with his runs. I like the over in this game.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think. I think Lucas Oil Stadium has a dome, do they not?
They do. Yes, they do indeed.
I think they have a dome. So that total is a little crazy. I can see it, open doors out there. It could be some snow, could be things like that, and that you get a 47.5 number because of that. But with a dome, obviously, that kind of takes it out of the equation. So I kind of agree with you, but they will probably be playing it close to the vest to start the game, both teams, that is. So maybe that has a little something to do with it. I think that Ohio State, playing Michigan, playing their big rival last week, that is a decent football team. It's a little harder for them because they had to play four quarters. Indiana really didn't have to play four quarters. And it does matter, the energy you use from week to week, how high you have to step up when you're playing a team like Purdue and you're just blowing them out. You could get a lot of rest. You can rotate in and out your defensive line, which is really the big key for a lot of these people. And you could stay fresh. So Indiana has a little bit of a bump because of that, but it's going to be tough for me to see a team taking down Ohio State. I've been saying it all year. I'm still going to continue to say it. Indiana is the one that can do it. So I'm not probably going to actually take any money directly on this one. I know I've been getting hit throughout the week taking both sides on my market making here, but are you going to actually take any side? It sounded like you weren't, but maybe the total over. That's it.
I'm definitely taking the over in this one. I love that 47.5 number. It's not that 49 that we see a lot. And I'll probably lean towards Ohio State. I just, like I said, I think they're the more complete team. And if they win this game, I feel like it's going to be a lot of defense for Ohio State if they cover this game. So like they that's kind of it's not a true hedge, obviously, because Indiana could win with the over. But for me, it feels like if Ohio State's going to cover, it's going to be a defensive struggle. So maybe I'll take a little bit on Ohio State just to mentally keep myself in it.
There you go. A little bit of a correlation bet there. It doesn't have to be 100% correlation. You just need a little bit of correlation there. You're hedging yourself a bit. So I like it, Mr. Story. I will probably stay away from the spread unless if we see it getting down to a two number, which I could see right before kickoff. If we see a two number, maybe I take the dogs just because I like to take a dog when I get a chance, Mr. Story. We're going to jump to another big game though this weekend, SEC Championship. I'm sure there's some people Looking forward to this one, especially down south. Number three team in the nation, Georgia, right now, taking on number nine team in the nation, Alabama. This one is at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, where these two teams are very accustomed to playing each other. Saturday afternoon game on ABC, baby.
They are not only accustomed to playing in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, they're accustomed to playing each other. This is the latest edition, excuse me, of the SEC Championship, Alabama versus Georgia. I mean, early in the season, we thought Texas, Texas A&M, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, all these teams had a chance to vie to play in this championship game. And yet here we are, Georgia and Alabama. I'd love to count it up over the last 15 years and tell me how many SEC Championship games were Texas, or excuse me, or Alabama in Georgia. In any event, these are both really strong teams that are peaking at the right time. I talked about Alabama already. They have kind of everything working for them. Now, they did have Jam Miller leave on crutches last week. He's been their star running back, although it looks like Daniel Hill was kind of taking over that backfield a couple weeks ago, but then it leaned back towards Jam Miller. So I'd say they're pretty set in that regard. Georgia's got its own run game that they're kind of leaning on. They're kind of leaning away from the pass and relying on the run game. Nate Frazier's emerged at this late season workhorse back. They've had some issues on defense. We talked about that with Josh and Jeremy. They've had some injuries on defense, but it's still an elite defense, and the secondary is one of the best in the country. So I'm really, this total, this line, this is all in line with what I would realistically expect for both of these teams. I'm going to turn it over to you because I kind of want to just sit back and watch this game. It feels to me like this is going to be a brawl.
Yeah, it definitely feels that way to me too. I'm excited to watch this football game. Whenever we get to see Georgia Alabama play football, it's always an exciting game. I can tell you where the money's coming in right now because I've been getting hit real hard in this game. People are betting on Alabama plus 2.5, and I get that logic. I get it, but I want to remind everyone. Let's go back to the beginning of the season when this Alabama football team, lost to Florida State. Florida State Seminoles. I know they're better now and they've progressed, but they have shown weakness. And if you're playing a team like Georgia, you cannot show weakness. You mentioned Jam Miller. It was unfortunate that injury he had last game because against Auburn, Alabama finally throughout the season had their first, I shouldn't say first game, but the first time where they really showed some potential with that run game, which they're going to absolutely need against Georgia. How well are they going to be able to do? Have you heard, is Miller out for this game for sure?
No, we'll have our first SEC injury reporting tomorrow, three days before the game, and then we'll know for sure 90 minutes before the game whether he's playing or not. I can tell you, I was watching the game, and he left on crutches with no pads. To me, that screams that he's not playing. But you never know. You never like sometimes the pads come off, and you find it's not as bad as you originally thought. So we will see.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Even with the injury reports, you know how much I trust those pieces of crap, to bet on anyways. So it was just unfortunate. Alabama finally had that run game going against a good Auburn defense that, can shut down the run. But it's just maybe if he's not in, it's really going to hurt them. It's going to ruin that momentum for that football team. So I don't mind taking the favorites in this football game. I just think Georgia is the far superior football game. Any football team, excuse me, any team can win a football game, but I think the Georgia Bulldogs are a better football team. I will probably be taking a direction on them and backing them on the spread as long as it doesn't go to that three number. I'm not touching that if we're at minus three, especially for a championship game. Another championship game we got this weekend, the Big 12 championship. Number 11, BYU, taking on number four in the nation, Texas Tech. I wish we had Mr. Jeremy Harlow on here, the Big 12 beat reporter, to let us know about this one. I can tell you this much, Mr. Story. This game's Saturday, 11 a.m. on ABC at AT&T Stadium.
Well, both these teams absolutely took care of business last week. Like they knew that a bid for the college football playoffs was on the line. BYU trounces UCF 41-21, and then Texas Tech blanks West Virginia 49-0. I mean, big playoff stakes here, a big number, 49.5 over under. Texas Tech -12.5 to 13.5, depending on when you get it. This is BYU is another team that's getting the receiving core back healthy. They've looked noticeably sharper in recent weeks as a result. This is a rematch. Remember how Texas Tech absolutely put it on BYU? You and I were watching that game in person, and we were surprised that BYU was struggling so much. But at the same time, you look at Texas Tech, they're an elite offense, an elite passing profile, 11-1 on the season, number four in the rankings right now. They got tempo. They get guys out in space. They got speed, situational execution, makes them capable of absolutely pulling away in this game if BYU cannot keep it close. I don't think I want to take the spread on this. I think the the books are kind of teasing us with that 12.5 to 13.5, but man, this game should provide plenty of fireworks.
It absolutely should. And when you say in person, you mean we were together watching the game at a friend's house. We were actually not at Jones AT&T
Oh,
Stadium. We
that's
were out there in Iowa, coincidentally enough,
we don't
watching.
get paid that much by this podcast.
No, we don't. This podcast is actually a money eater, so let me tell you that much. Between my mom and your mom and Mr. Josh Harlow, who wait, no, who just oh, your brother and your brother listening to it, those three don't pay the bills for us. Maybe next year. There's always next year, buddy. But I agree that this football game is going to come down to how much Texas Tech can beat BYU by. That I know I'm paraphrasing. You didn't necessarily say that, but we watched that first football game, and they just the first quarter, you could tell that Texas Tech was going to run away with that football game. BYU could not stop them. It's actually what was most surprising about that football game was at the end of the game, the score was only 29-7. If you were watching it through all four quarters, you would have expected that, you know, Texas Tech was in the 40s just crushing BYU and maybe blanking them because they just couldn't get anything done against that Texas Tech defense, but they also could not stop that Texas Tech offense. So in this football game, I think you just got to take Texas Tech under two touchdown spread.
Well, I mean, this is the largest spread among the Power Conference title games. I think it's reflective of Texas Tech's ceiling and some market skepticism about BYU. Can they play Texas Tech tough for four quarters? And we saw it on the TV. Probably not. Well, I guess we'll find out again on Saturday, right? This is Saturday.
Yeah, this game is Saturday, early morning, 11 a.m. I
Got
shouldn't say
it.
early
Yes,
morning, but
early.
it's the
Well,
morning.
yeah, 11 a.m.
It's early morning for you, isn't it, buddy? 11 a.m. is early morning for Mr. Story. Let me tell the fans of the Rundown Nation. Now, another game here that is at night that you're going to get to watch. I know you're going to be more happy about the time of this one. 7 p.m. Central Time on ABC. Championship for the ACC. Duke playing number 17 in the nation, Virginia. And this is going to be the first team we're talking about in one of these championship games that does not have a number next to them. Duke that is not ranked, Mr. Story. How about that, them apples?
I mean, two sharply different identities here in terms of obviously the rankings. I don't think anybody expected a 7-5 Duke team to be playing in the ACC championship, but also offensive identities, defensive identities. Virginia's got one of the league's most explosive passing attacks. While Duke comes in, they've got balance, they've got discipline. They do have one of the best red zone defenses in the country if you look at the metrics. This one, -3.5 for the Virginia Hokies there, and then total sitting at 57.5 right now. So that is another one that is just screaming over high points. A lot of downfield passes, stretching the defense horizontally, vertically, getting big chunk plays. When Virginia's in rhythm, they can generate those big plays downfield, force Duke into some uncomfortable pace. I think that Virginia walks away with this one. I'm just not sold on Duke being in this ACC championship game.
Oh, Mr. Story, you're not going to like this, but you're going to have some very angry Virginia fans. You referred to them as the Hokies, my
Oh my
friend.
goodness, I did. Oh
And
my goodness,
I
I
know it
did.
was a slip of the tongue, but any Virginia fans listening to this, any Cavalier fans listening to this program right now, I apologize for what Mr. Story said. Let me tell you that.
Yeah, I owe a complete and utter apology to you are right to all of the Virginia fans out there. That will not happen again. Woo.
No, please don't let it happen again. We don't need to lose more viewers here, Mr. Story. I'll say this game is Manny Diaz. The reason a Duke football team is in the ACC championship game this year is because of Manny Diaz. He had not performed well at the big programs. He went over to Duke and he's taken them to a 7-5 record. Yes, 7-5, that's it. But still, it doesn't matter. They're in the championship game right now. They have potential to go to the playoffs. And I believe most of that is because of Manny Diaz. He's just a good coach. He's not my, it's, I'm sure you have some terrible things to say about him. He's not my favorite coach. I don't like the way he necessarily does things, but like Mr. Cignetti over there in Indiana says, look at my record. Look what I've done. He's done good things. So I think that's really a big point in this football game. If you're looking at the line, 3.5, 3, if you get it under that 3 number, I'm going to just be hammering Virginia. Let me tell you right now, hammering them. I love this football game because on the exchange, they had ACC champion at different odds than Duke or Virginia to win the football game. So I was e making easy heads there, betting one team to win the championship and one team to win the football game. So when you get opportunities like that where you can just arb out, make money, you know, it makes for a good week, especially when you can do it on a Monday, get that money in your pocket. I want to talk about another game that's going on this weekend that might be a little bit under the radar, the AAC championship game. We got number 24 in the nation, North Texas, playing at number 20 in the nation, Tulane, the old Green Wave, baby.
Yeah, this is a top 25 matchup, believe it or not. North Texas 24, Tulane 20. This is a showdown with a couple of teams that have been surprisingly very good this year. North Texas 11-1, Tulane 10-2. I mean, North Texas, this is another team that's got a super explosive offense. They got this is a Tulane team that's also very explosive on offense, but they bring physicality and a huge defensive advantage there. And this one is in New Orleans, so this is a home field advantage, right? So North Texas, even though they are the, excuse me, well, North Texas is the favorite in this game on the road, even in uptown New Orleans. So for me, Caleb Hawkins, Chandler Massmaker, they give the Mean Green multiple ways to stretch the field out. Then the pace can really pressure any opponent, including Tulane, into an up-tempo game, which I'm not sure that Tulane wants to play with. This is a game that the over-under, I'm not sure if this is the highest over-under of the championship games, but it's got to be up there at 66 and a half. So is North Texas, is their explosive downfield passing game going to overcome the physical nature of Tulane's defense? I'm not so sure. I mean, I'd love to take the over in this game, sitting at 66 and a half, but man, that is a lot of points to put on the board. You get a first quarter that starts out slowly and you got the over, you are clutching that ticket harder, tighter and tighter as the game goes on.
Absolutely. This is a tough over to bet. I'll tell you that much. That's a big number. And it is the biggest, the highest over under we have on the slate this weekend. Kennesaw State, Jacksonville State is the next highest. And that's a full touchdown lower at 59 and a half, or just about a full touchdown lower at 59 and a half. So some points expected. You mentioned the reason why already. It was definitely a mess maker over there at North Texas. Just a fantastic, phenomenal quarterback. He puts up yards, baby. You're talking about 3,835 passing yards on the year. Yes, I know they pass a lot, but still, 3,835 passing yards. And that golden ratio that we're talking about all the time for quarterbacks, we got his touchdowns at 29. We got interceptions for all those passes. You know, if you're passing for nearly 4K, you're passing a lot. He only has four interceptions on the season, Mr. Store. He is careful with that football. He makes good decisions, and he just succeeds in what he does. I really like Mr. Messmaker. I think he's the reason North Texas is so good this year. I've been talking about them from the beginning of the year. I thought the Mean Green were just going to play great football. I thought they had some great recruitment come in. They had some money in the program that brought in those players, and they've shown it throughout the year. I really like them to win this football game and maybe win it big, maybe take an alt. I hate to go against the Tulane, baby. I like Tulane. But maybe take an alt, take them minus 5.5, minus 6.5, get some money back in your pocket, put a Rolex on a redneck type alt in the line, Mr. Story.
Yeah, some of that plus money alt lines, huh?
Yeah, that's the way I roll. If I'm gonna bet, I'm gonna bet big. You're gonna give me some big plus money, let me tell you. You know, one thing we gotta talk about this week, because we've been kind of, washing it to the side, and I know people love it. So we're gonna have to jump into story time this week.
Absolutely. I have fully prepared this week. I know that we skipped it 2 weeks ago and I'm very brief last week. I've also got some topics lined up for bowl season. I figure that we're going to want to talk, people are going to want need a little more information as they get ready for bowl season. But in this case, since it is conference championship week, we're going to talk about rematches because most of these games this weekend are rematches. So for me, I'm looking at what changes and what doesn't in the second time that teams meet during the season. The NFL, you know you're getting rematches because every team plays their conference opponent, or excuse me, their division opponent twice. In this case, conference championship week is filled with rematches, and it's really the only time of year that we see it in college football. Bettors often struggle to separate what actually carries over from the first time that these teams are meeting and what was simply noise. So we're trying to understand, we've talked about it in the past, the true predictive value of a rematch. So in this case, number one, I know I hate to say it, but you got to kind of look past the score. Sometimes the score lies while the matchup usually doesn't. One of the biggest mistakes that bettors will make is treating the final score of the first meeting as the quote unquote truth of the matchup. But in rematches, what matters isn't necessarily the number on the scoreboard. What we're looking at is the underlying traits of the matchup. So who won on the line of scrimmage? Who won in the trenches there? Who dictated the pace? What would the turnover situation look like? Who created more sustainable scoring opportunities? Who won the time of possession battle? These things often repeat. Explosive turnovers and busted plays typically don't. The other thing that we want to look for is how do coaches adjust to this? So coaches, they're not static, right? They evolve throughout a game, and as the weeks go on, they're evolving throughout the season. We see differences in formation tendencies, in blitzing packages, coverage rotations, run first versus pass first priorities. But teams that are heavy run teams, they don't necessarily become a vertical passing team overnight in a rematch if they weren't one, and they don't become an up-tempo offense overnight. So bettors will often overrate adjustments, and this creates issues where you can see some value or a lack thereof. In rematch, each team still has to play through its core identity. In the first meeting, we're looking at, were these drives sustainable? Were they, or did you get broken plays, and were they fluky? Was one team constantly ahead of the chains? Did one defense force the other quarterback into short, predictable throws? If you're looking strictly at metrics, defensive metrics, do they create turnovers so they didn't have to be on the field as much? These sustainable advantages, the success rates that we look at, the red zone efficiencies, the pressure rates, they often carry over to the second matchup, and then the overall score usually doesn't. And turnovers, red zone fumbles, tip drill interceptions, blindside strip sacks, these almost never repeat. We're dealing with a game that's whose ball is a prolate spheroid, right? These kind of turnovers are oftentimes they're lucky. You never really can tell how turnover. Now, good teams do create turnovers on a regular basis, but in a one-to-one rematch, it's not necessarily the case. So for me, here's what I'm looking at. I'm going to ignore the final score. Of course, that is important in the grand scheme of things. But overall, when I'm looking to bet these rematches, I'm going to look at the rematch first. What's sustainable versus what is unsustainable type production? I'm trying to find those edges that are repeatable, not just the ones that are one-off. I'm wondering, though, I'm also considering whether books are going to shade the rematches slightly tighter because we have talked about how familiarity reduces variance. But when you've got a clear advantage on those matchups, those sustainable matchup numbers, those are the things that I'm looking for when betting rematches. So for me, who won the first game? It's important, certainly, but not the most important thing. I'm wondering what from that first game can we take over and what actually matters this second time around.
Very interesting. Now, I knew the topic that you were going to jump into with this story time. I didn't know exactly what you were going to say or how you were going to go about it. One thing that I was thinking through that whole thing, and you kind of where you were going with this, you could have potentially an advantage. Let me lay the foundation. 95, 96, 97% of the lines that are made these days are done quantitatively. It's just the way it is. Argue all you want, you'd be wrong. So in a situation like this, maybe a sports bettor could potentially have an edge over those quantitative models by watching the individual matchups on the line, or especially the line, I guess, but on the outside, maybe cornerback, wide receiver, and taking away that stuff like the fumbles, the randomness that occurs in all these football games. That kind of is, to paraphrase what you were saying, no?
That's exactly, I think you put it a little more eloquently than I did, but that's exactly what we're trying to, and this is a kind of an underlying theme through several of the topics that we've talked about, is what's predictive versus what was just descriptive. In this case, I know that I mentioned turnovers, you mentioned turnovers here, but I'm talking about good teams do create turnovers, right? They have a positive turnover differential, but in matchups, in a small sample size of a one game matchup, if a quarterback happened to just the ball pops out of his hands, or a receiver has it pop up and the defense catches it, or something along the lines of a fumble that you couldn't predict because it got punched out because of the right angle. Those kinds of things, they're not necessarily prescriptive, right? They're great for the defense at the time, but if you're just looking at the metrics, and you had mentioned it's all most of it is quantitatively derived. If you can sit down and actually watch a game and understand what's important and what's going to carry over to the next game, I think you might have an advantage there.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. And I think that's where you could potentially lay your hat. Although you mentioned it right when you started, we only get these matchups once a year, twice a year at most if you're going to the playoffs, but usually they tend to avoid those matchups as best they can. So, but still, you just need that little bit of edge. That's all you need in sports betting. You need to beat that 2.5%. So I love it. I love that topic, Mr. Story. I'm wondering if you're going to get any questions about it or anything we missed. I'm going to have to go back and review a couple of these games, Alabama, Georgia, BYU, Texas Tech, maybe check to see if any of that holds true, and then make my opinion thereafter of the teams. Love it. Love it, Mr. Story. Always appreciate you doing those. But now we're going to jump. We're running long here on time. We're going to jump right into what everybody usually fast forwards to, probably. We're going to jump into the rundown, pick them. How did you guys do last week? I forgot to write down the stuff, and I never actually made the bets because I wasn't on the program.
Well, we went 2-1. We were pretty excited about that. Josh was, even though I disagreed with his pick at the time, Oregon absolutely manhandled USC. So he hit -6.5, and I hit on Houston +3. Didn't even need it. They won outright. Unfortunately, Jeremy was really close, but Utah and Kansas could not hit that over at 59.5. So we went 2-1 last week.
2-1. Hey, that makes you money. You can do that every week. You're going to make money. I gotta love it. Do you want to go first today or you want me to go first?
I'll go first if you don't mind. I've got a little bit of a streak going here, so hopefully we can keep it going. We have talked about this game already tonight. I'm going to take North Texas -2.5 versus Tulane. This is one of the sneakier numbers on the championship week board for me. So North Texas, number 24 in the nation, they're ranked lower, yet they come in as a 2.5 point favorite, -135 on the money line. This is a signal to me that the market trusts North Texas's profile more than Tulane's, even if it is a true road environment. We mentioned how this one is in New Orleans. It's a high total, 66.5. We also talked about that. Odds makers expect pace, explosive plays, long stretches of back and forth scoring, those kind of shootouts. I tend to lean the favorite in that. So this slight favorite usually gets the benefit of the doubt from me. North Texas has a super consistent offense, more consistent than Tulane, in my opinion. They're the more reliable team in finishing drives. They're the more capable team of stringing together the kind of quick scoring bursts that flip the momentum of the game. So I do expect this to be tight, but for me, the lean is North Texas finding just enough offense to squeak out a win and cover that 2.5 point spread.
You're preaching to the choir, brother. I don't know if you picked that just to make me happy, but you know how I feel about the Mean Green. They're a fantastic football team. If you want to make money, bet on North Texas. I'll leave it at that. You know I'll be following you there. Probably put a full-size wager on this one. Same size as my bet here. And before I get into mine, I want to mention, because we're not going to do a podcast for the Army Navy game, but I do want to mention the Army Navy game is not this weekend. It'll be in Baltimore the weekend after. So December 13th. Hope everyone can watch that. It's always a fantastic environment, but we won't do an episode just for that. We'll be back later in the season, likely right when they choose the Bulls. But for my pick'em this week, I'm going to take a total for the first time this year, and I'm going to take a BYU Texas Tech over 49. What do you think about that, Mr. Totals?
I absolutely love that. I think I mentioned I am not sure why this total was below 50, but man, I love that over 49.5. Is that what you got at 49 or 49 and
No,
a half?
I got it
49?
at what I did is I went over here, I had to look through the books, I had to find a good one. And you know, our actually the real bet I wanted to take was Virginia, but I couldn't find them at a good enough price. We got to be under that, what was it, 115 number, -115 to be fair.
120, but yeah, we looked
120.
before the
Yeah,
program
120.
here.
And I couldn't find Virginia -3 under that number, so I had to go somewhere else. I ended up going over to Fanatics and seeing them over 49 at -115, Mr. Story.
Your
How about
favorite sports book there,
my favorite sport?
Mr.
And
Fanatics.
I had to use my system. They don't actually let me on Fanatics. If I try to log on, because they're the ones that bought out PointsBet. So if I try to log on, the FBI shows up at my door and takes all my equipment away. So I had to go through my system to find that. But yeah, I'm real happy about that over 49 number.
Well, they currently will take my money, so I'm going to be getting off of this program and heading right over there to take that over 49. I look forward to a high flying evening of college football. Oh, excuse me, morning of college football. That's the morning game.
Absolutely. And we got football all day, though. Morning, afternoon, night. You know, it's championship weekend. Get the popcorn ready. Get the Ruffles. Get the Coors Light. It's going to be a good day. Man, I can't believe how fast this season goes, but we're at championship weekend already. Oh, it's sad, but it's also exciting, Mr. Story.
I look forward to reconvening for bowl season, which is arguably the best time of the year for me.
Absolutely. It's the most exciting and usually the most profitable for me, knock on wood, I guess. But until we get to our bowl episodes, I hope everyone is profitable in their sports bets. I hope everyone keeps it responsible. You know, that's the most important thing when you're betting. Do not go on those binges. Do not go on those high rolling weekends where you lose it all. Be responsible. Stay sharp. We'll talk to you at bowl season, sports bettors.